And welcome, everyone listening in the entire universe. This is Coast to Coast. My name is David Rubin. Tonight I have some amazing guests for you. In the first hour, we're going to talk to Michael Cremo, Forbidden Archaeology, Ancient Cultures. Seems like our current scientists are not willing to admit that humans have been around a lot longer than, 10,000 years. Coming up in hour two, John Lear. We're going to talk about genetic engineering. What have they been doing to the human race? What have they been doing in secret places with secret experiments? We're going to find out coming up tonight on Coast to Coast. A little background on myself. I have been a guest on the program several times. My area of expertise is dreams and intuition. I also deal with supernatural phenomenon. Some people have visitations. Some people call them demons. Some people call them extraterrestrials. Could be a combination of all, or it could be none of the above. A little bit of news for you. In Houston, a fisherman who suffered a seemingly minor scrape during a Sunday outing on Lake Conroe has died from an infection of flesh-eating bacteria. Seems like the world is sort of ganging up on humans. A lot of storms, a lot of strange things happening, and nature is fighting back. Another story out of California. A court has ruled last Thursday that cell phone use while driving is legal. You know all those times you got a ticket? Well, if you had been just simply using your navigation on your phone, you probably could have gotten out of $165 fine. It's nice to know, though, that at least there's some reason left in the court system to see that we have these devices and they have a lot of different uses besides texting and talking. I use my navigation all the time. Also, getting into more of the area that I'm interested in, scientists claim 800,000-year-old footprints found in England are oldest seen outside of Africa. Now imagine, of course, this a million years ago, they were a British family on a day out. Yes, a million years ago. Archaeologists announced Friday they had discovered human footprints in England that are between 800,000 and 1 million years old, the most ancient found outside of Africa and the earliest evidence of human life in Northern Europe. A team from the British Museum, London's Natural History Museum, and Queen Mary College at the University of London uncovered imprints from up to five individuals in ancient estuary mud on the country's eastern coast. See, I truly believe that the human race has been here potentially for many, many millions of years. And I don't believe in the conventional idea of evolution. I think evolution is a construct designed to make us think that we're kind of a brand new species. I don't think that at all. And many scientists are now becoming more clear, and they're finding more evidence that potentially we may not even be native to this planet. Have you ever thought to yourself, and I'm sure you have, who am I? Where did I come from? I think that's one of the most fundamental questions that we all ask, especially as we, you know, we get to that point in time where we wonder so many things. I know for me, it was probably 12 or 13 years old. Why was I brought into this world? Where did I come from? Where am I going? Another interesting news article. NASA's Planet Hunting Telescope strikes it big, finds 715 new planets outside of our solar system. Now, this is amazing because they have these new techniques they use for looking around these stars. Before, they couldn't see these exoplanets, but now they have found that, according to NASA, they found multiple transitioning planet systems, which are stars with more than one planet. The planets eclipse in transit their host star from the vantage point of the observer. The angle is edge on. Our galaxy is looking far more crowded as NASA Wednesday confirmed a bonanza of 750 newly discovered planets circling stars other than our sun. Four of those new planets are in the habitable zones. And so you think about that, the Goldilocks zone planets, like the planets of Avatar. Now, I think that in our lifetime, many of us will be able to step foot on another planet. Maybe not me, but maybe some of you who are listening. I saw the other day that they're already taking spaces on the first private space ride, and that they're actually looking at a two-hour transition from America to Europe simply by getting up into the stratosphere. It's amazing. The potential for the future of the human race is limitless. But then again, there are those who want to put limitations on us. And there's the big question that looms is why? What are people so afraid of? What are the scientists so afraid of? What are the religious community afraid of? When I say religious community, I mean the bigger picture. If we're not alone in this universe, we should know about it. We should know what potentially we share with others. But if that's not the case, all right. Fine, we're alone. But I don't think so. Now, the question is, could they be coming from other dimensions? And I think so, too. I think both possibilities are real. So with our guest tonight, Michael Cremo, he has written several books, including Forbidden Archaeology, The Hidden History of the Human Race. And here's what we're going to examine, which is how can an artifact, an artificially made, let's say, produced artifact, find its way into the middle of a piece of granite 65 feet. How does that end up there? I've always been curious. I can't imagine that the human race is only 8 or 10 or 15 or even 20 or 50,000 years old. But look at how much our Earth changes. I mean, not so long ago, an enormous number of people died in a giant tsunami. 250,000 people swept away. Hurricanes, constantly volcanic activity on this planet. So much going on to erase the evidence of human existence. And why is it that only in the last 100, 150 years have we become so technologically advanced? It's a question that bothers me. Because we've gone so far so fast. Is it just exponential mathematics? We get to a certain point and we accelerate? Or is there something more to it? I think there's something more to it. I'm a stargazer. I'm a sky watcher. I'm always looking. And I've seen things. I've seen a lot of things. I've never gotten close to any of them. But I've seen them. And I've been in a crowd of people who didn't. Are you one of those? Because I'm constantly being vigilant, looking for signs, for evidence. Because, you know, you take so many things on faith. You believe what other people tell you. I think something about being human puts us in a situation where we come into a world and our mind and our life is formed by our environment. So we have different cultures, different groups of people doing different things. But in a sense, not really. I think that the only thing that really divides the human race in any way, shape, or form is language barriers. And those can be overcome. So in a sense, we really are all the same. And yet, we come into the environment and it starts to shape us and make us reflect what it is. But what if that was taken off of us? What if we were allowed to grow and discover and be shown the possibilities. Because most people aren't. Most people are told what they cannot do. Think about it. From the very time that you're a little child, and of course children need guidance, they need nurturing, they need boundaries. But at a certain point, the shackles should be taken off our minds. And we should be exposed to potentials. Potential for what we can be, what the earth can be, what our neighbors can be, how we can pull down all of the barrier walls that divide us nation by nation. Do you really think that we are designed to be warlike beings? It almost seems like there's something in our DNA that causes us to have to feel compelled to fight. And that's why we love to watch all the way back to Rome, the gladiators. In ancient history, everything was about warfare. Every culture revolved around warfare. I mean, I'm sure you've seen the movie The 300. They have a new movie coming out now called The 300, The Rise of an Empire. These are the kind of movies that get me to thinking. And then there's Man of Steel. I love that movie. Absolutely love that movie. Because they showed Superman's home world. A world inhabited by humanoids. And this is what I'm going to talk about tonight with our guests Michael Cremo and John Lear later on in the show. I don't think that we are native to this planet Earth. I think that we are potentially children of the stars. I mean, giants? Where did giants come from? What went wrong? Or what went very right? I don't know. Recent discoveries on giants that we're going to talk about with Michael Cremo just coming right up. So looking forward to having these conversations. I'm David Rubin. My guest tonight, Michael Cremo, in the first hour, and John Lear for the last 3 hours of the show. I think we'll take a break and we'll get Michael Cremo on and we will begin the process of exploration. I'm David Rubin. You're listening to Coast to Coast. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm David Rubin. And with me, Michael Cremo, author of many books, including Forbidden Archaeology, The Hidden History of the Human Race. And Michael Cremo is a member of the History of Science Society, the World Archaeological Congress, and a research associate in history and philosophy of science. Now, I understand, Michael, that you have, by the way, welcome to the show.
Good to be with you, David.
And I have been a fan of yours for many years. I read the book Forbidden Archaeology when you first published it, and it changed my life.
Oh,
it changed
great.
My whole way of looking at us as people. And now you've been to India. Tell me about what happened when you took your trip there.
Well, I went there for several purposes. One purpose was to give some lectures at conferences and universities. It's a great place to talk about the kind of thing that I do, because a lot of the impetus, a lot of the inspiration for my forbidden archaeology research came from my studies in the ancient Sanskrit writings of India, which speak of a very ancient human presence on this planet going back many, many millions of years. So it's really great to go there and talk about these things there in the country that is ultimately the source of these ideas that I've been researching for so many years. And before I studied the ancient Sanskrit writings of India, I really didn't have any reason to question what I'd always been taught in school by my teachers in high school and college. They believe humans have appeared fairly recently on this planet, less than 200,000 years ago. But the ancient Sanskrit writings of India say humans like us have existed for millions and millions and millions of years, all the way back to the very beginnings of the history of life on Earth. And that's what got me researching the archaeological evidence, and I was really surprised to find there's quite a bit of archaeological evidence in the form of human bones, human artifacts, and human footprints going back many millions of years. So I talked about that at universities and a scientific conference in India, and then after that, I kind of went on a little spiritual vacation to a sacred site in India called Navadvip. Nava is a Sanskrit word. It means nine, and Dvipa means island. So it's an area north of about 100 miles north of Calcutta on the Ganges River that's composed of nine islands, which are very sacred. And on one of these islands, I can't ever get away from the archaeological research. On one of the islands, which is called Godruma Dweep, there's a place called Suvarna Vihar, where they have ruins of an ancient palace of a king named Suvarna Sena, who existed millions of years ago at that place. And you have to understand something about the Vedic cyclical concept of time. He existed during the Satya Yuga, which is, according to the Vedic cosmological calendar, about 4 million years ago. So there's some interesting archaeological sites there that go back many millions of years.
Let me ask you this question. I believe what you're saying. Now, the question is, why do mainstream scientists want to keep this so undercover, so controlled? What's your take on that?
Well, I think it's ultimately because the alternatives to what they're proposing involve some kind of supernatural or spiritual or transcendental element to reality. The explanations they're currently giving for human origins are very materialistic. Basically, they're telling us we're just machines made of molecules in competition with each other for survival. You were talking about the reason for all the conflict in the world. I think this is one of the underlying reasons, this idea that we're just machines made of matter in competition with each other for survival. I think there's a reason why that idea is being promoted in the education systems all around the world. It's because if you give people a very materialistic conception of their identity, then the goals and values that they will adopt will be extremely materialistic. They will think that to produce and consume more and more material things is the main purpose of human life. And in doing so, they generate huge amounts of wealth, which flows in an unequal, unfair way into certain pockets. And they're just huge political, financial, cultural interest groups in the world that want to see that process continue because they can use it for domination, control, and exploitation of the world's populations. So if people had a different idea of their identity, that we're all beings of pure consciousness, we're all related to each other, we shouldn't be dividing ourselves into competing groups, we don't have to struggle for survival, we can satisfy our material needs in some very simple, natural, and efficient way, and put most of our human energy into developing the resource of consciousness, that would be an entirely different world. It would be a world that these forces and powers really don't want to see.
You're absolutely right. You're right. Now, I think you might have heard me say that I do not believe in evolution. In fact, I agree with you, and this is a very interesting point that I don't hear discussed anywhere, that you believe that not only did we not evolve, but we actually have at some level devolved. Tell me more about that.
Well, in one sense, we're all extraterrestrials. It means understanding, you have to understand what a human being really is. Now, today, most scientists are going to say we're just machines made of molecules, but I think there's more to it than that. I think there is a non-material conscious self that is like a passenger in the vehicle of the body made of matter. And that conscious self has an origin that's non-material. It has an origin that is extraterrestrial. So in that sense, we're all extraterrestrial beings. I believe we're all ultimately beings of pure consciousness who have entered the world of matter from some higher position that we once occupied in the cosmos, and we're meant to return to that position, which,
you know,
we can call
I tell
the level
you,
of pure consciousness.
I completely agree with you. And I think that even beyond that, I think that some people, and I was having this discussion with a friend of mine today, we'll come back and talk more with Michael Cremo. I'm David Rubin, and you're listening to Coast to Coast. And welcome, Universe. It is Coast to Coast, and my guest tonight, Michael Cremo, we're talking about forbidden archaeology, and we're going to talk about giants. Where, why, how, giants, yes, giants. Coming up also tonight, John Lear, a very long discussion and a very deep discussion about genetic engineering. What have they been doing? What don't you want to know? I don't know. I don't know how much I can take of this because I'm already worried about genetically modified organisms in my food. What are they going to do to me? But that's not important right now. What's important is we get to look behind the curtain. Michael Cremo has devoted a lifetime to understanding the secrets that other people want to keep from you. They shouldn't be secrets. They should be for everyone to know. Whatever, doesn't matter what it is. Transparency. So we go now to Michael Cremo. Back to Michael Cremo. Welcome back to Coast to Coast, Michael.
Great to be back.
Let's talk about giants. You found some information on your journey. Tell me about it.
Well, I'm always interested in topics like this. Of course, in the news recently, there have been some reports of megalithic, huge megalithic structures. You know, for example, in Ecuador, a researcher named Bruce Fenton and some of his co-workers have located in the jungles of Ecuador a megalithic pyramidal type structure, a pyramid made of big blocks of stone. And according to the reports, you know, they've found in the neighborhood of this site large stone tools, much larger than a human of normal size could use. And I've also gotten reports from a gentleman in Russia named George Sidorov, who has located huge megalithic structures in southern Siberia at a place called Gornaya Chornia. And these are huge blocks of stone, I mean, 20 by 30 feet in size, that are joined together in megalithic structures, apparently. And they're huge. So that just leads to the question, what sort of people would make these huge structures and use the kinds of implements that were found, for example, in Ecuador? A lot of my thoughts on this topic of giants are informed by my studies in the ancient Sanskrit writings of India, which involve a cyclical concept of time. And there are statements in these ancient Sanskrit writings that in previous ages, in previous yugas, as they're called, living beings were bigger than they are today. And in a sacred city named Vrindavan in India, there are footprints of Krishna, who there is known as God, and they're huge, huge footprints. And they also have in Vrindavan big artifacts, big stone mortars and pestles and things like that that were used to the people existing there in ancient times that are bigger than people of normal size today could possibly use. So I think that in the past, there were people of larger size than today. And that's really just, in one sense, part of ordinary science, because even modern paleontology tells us that before 5 or 10,000 years ago, a lot of plants and animals were much bigger than they are today. The bears were bigger, the mountain lions were bigger. I live in California, and in the mountains of California, the Sierra Nevada mountains, we have the California redwood trees, some of which are over 5,000 years old, and they're massive. They're huge. They're over 300 feet tall, 100 meters tall, some of them. They're the largest living things on Earth. So I think before the previous age began, things, including human beings, were bigger than they are today. There is some skeletal evidence that humans were bigger than they are today. It's very hard to track down. There are lots of photographs on the web of these things, but it's kind of hard to track them down. But there was one case that I think is one of the best documented cases in the scientific literature. It relates to discoveries that were made in France in the late 19th century by an archaeologist named Lapouge. And he found at a place called Castelnau near the town of Montpellier in central France, the bones of a human being that were really quite big. He didn't find a complete skeleton. He found a thigh bone and an upper arm bone, technically called a humerus. Now, anthropologists who are expert can tell you if you've got a femur, a thigh bone of a certain size, or an arm bone of a certain size, they can tell you how tall the human being that had those bones would have been. And they calculated that the human being that had these bones must have been 11 feet tall or more. So that's really quite big. I mean, we see some big people in the world today. You know, there are a lot of them playing on the NBA, but they're about 7 feet tall, maybe almost 8 feet tall, but there's nobody 11, 10, 10 feet tall today.
What would have allowed for the people to be that much larger? I mean, was there some kind of mutation? What happened?
Well, you know, I have to admit, sometimes I just have to say, I don't know. It's just that the evidence is there in the ancient wisdom traditions. It's there in some of the structures. It's there in some of the skeletal remains that have been found. Exactly why that was and how it happened, I just have to say, I personally don't know.
I go back to the idea of the fallen angels, the Nephilim. Let's talk about that when we come back from a break. My guest right now, Michael Cremo, and you can find him at Michael Cremo, mcremo.com, and check out his recent book. It's absolutely fantastic. We'll talk about that more when I come back. I'm David Rubin, and you're listening to Coast to Coast. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm David Rubin. My guest this hour, Michael Cremo. His website, mcremo.com or www.forbiddenarchaeology.com. He's got a new book out, My Science, My Religion. But before we talk about that, I've got to ask you, Michael, what can you tell me about the spacecraft described in the ancient writings of India? Tell me about that.
They're called Vimanas, and there are many different kinds of them because according to the cosmology of ancient India, we live in a multi-level cosmos. There's one level of the cosmos dominated by ordinary matter. That's the level that we inhabit now. And then beyond that, there's a level of the cosmos dominated by subtle mental and intellectual energies. It's inhabited by beings adapted to the conditions there. You know, people call them astral beings or gods or goddesses, angels. They have different names for them. And beyond that, there's what I call the level of pure consciousness, which is inhabited by purely conscious beings who are free of any contact with matter, either gross or subtle. So there are vimanas, or spacecraft, that come from all these different levels. On our level, they tend to be made of metal and function in ways that we might be somewhat familiar with, although they may have strange characteristics as well. But there are also vimanas that come from higher dimensions. In your opening remarks on the show, you were talking about extra dimensionals rather than extraterrestrials. I think
yes,
that's a definite, something that's definitely true. So in the ancient Sanskrit texts, there are descriptions of vimanas, some made of ordinary metals, some made of more subtle material elements, and some made of purely spiritual or transcendental elements. And there are fascinating accounts of them in the ancient Sanskrit writings. I've talked about some of this on the Ancient Alien series that's aired on the History Channel over the past few years. One of the most fascinating accounts is the metal spaceship that was acquired by a demoniac king on Earth who used it to attack the city of Dwarka, which was the city of Krishna in ancient India. And the descriptions are really amazing. This craft was hovering over the city, showering down different types of weapons, including weapons that resembled energy beam weapons or something like that. And there were attempts to shoot it down, but it was very difficult because, according to the descriptions, this craft could appear and disappear. It could appear simultaneously in a number of places. It kind of reminds me of modern electronic warfare when, say, an aircraft is entering an enemy airspace and it puts out false radar images to confuse the detection systems of the place it's attacking, to confuse the weaponry. It's nothing new. This has been going on for a long, long time, according to these ancient Sanskrit texts. So another fascinating thing I found was an account of a subtle material vimana that was manifested by a yogi named Kardama Muni. It was as big as a city, and he was using it to travel from planet to planet. And the descriptions say that within this huge vimana, there were artificial birds that were, it was like a huge place, this ship, like a floating city in the sky. But there were artificial birds, according to the text, that were so real that the real birds that were also inside this vimana would be attracted to it. And just recently in the news, I read that the United States military has developed drones that look exactly like birds. It's an attempt to kind of conceal the drones, because if you see a regular drone come over, you know what it is.
Yes.
And, you know, you might try to shoot it down or something if you were one of the objects of pursuit of one of these drones. But a drone that looked and behaved like a bird flying in the sky might not attract your attention like that. So the military has already developed these things. And it said they're so real that other birds try to come up to them. So, but again, it's nothing new. I mean, you might think, well, this is the latest technology that's being developed today, but thousands of years ago, such things were already there, according to these ancient Sanskrit texts.
Let me ask you this. Why have we just in the last, let's say, 100 years, advanced scientifically so rapidly? What is your take on that?
Well, I think history goes in cycles. I don't think this is the first time that human civilizations have developed advanced technologies. The ancient Sanskrit writings and the text of other ancient wisdom traditions certainly speak about advanced technologies. I think what's happening now is we're trying to recreate the technologies that previously relied on more subtle energies. We're trying to reproduce the same things in ordinary denser matter, metals and plastics and things like that. And we're also trying to do it in such a way that we can commercialize them, market them, sell them, and things like that. So I think that's what's going on now. I think today we're trying to reproduce either abilities that people once naturally had, like telepathy, you know, the ability to communicate at a distance. And, you know, we might have smartphones and computers and things like that that we're using to try to replicate these earlier abilities that people once had naturally. And not only just replicate the technologies, but do it in such a way that they can be used to control and exploit people and extract money from them.
Well, let's talk for a moment about scientific fraud. You've talked a lot about that over the years. And, of course, we have this problem that we're confronting, which is the idea that there's some kind of strange global climate change taking place, when we all feel that, at least those of us who have any common sense, feel that this is just a natural occurring cycles of nature. But are there specific areas in which fraud is rife throughout the scientific community?
Well, just recently there have been reports circulating in the top scientific journals like Nature and also in the news reports that hundreds of fake scientific articles have been published in some of the world's leading scientific publications. People just use computer programs to generate gibberish scientific articles, and they get published. And it's a huge embarrassment to the scientific community. But there's more than that going on, too. In the kind of research that's going on today, where they're trying to develop new pharmaceuticals or new consumer products, there's billions of dollars at stake for those who are able to get their research approved and pass through all the government agencies. So there's a lot at stake in terms of money, and people often, and it is a fact, it's admitted by mainstream scientific researchers themselves that there is a certain percentage of fraud and cheating that goes on, fudging of results in order to get their particular pharmaceutical or consumer, ultimately some consumer product, through the government approval and review process. So that kind of thing does go on. There are published articles in major scientific journals that have admitted that. But I think there's an even larger kind of problem, and it has to do with the kind of the ultimate questions, like the origin of the universe, the origin of life, the origin and identity of our species. I think there's a tremendous amount of what I would call knowledge filtration that goes on, and it's basically meant to keep us thinking that we're just machines made of matter in competition with each other for survival, and we're just meant to fit into a society that's based on domination, control, exploitation, and all of that. I think that is the worst kind of scientific fraud, where people are denied knowledge of who they really are and what they should really be doing.
It almost seems as if we live in a climate of constant fear of something. in order for them to be able to continue this charade that's going on?
Well, yes. I mean, ultimately, for the conscious self, it's neither created nor destroyed. It has an identity that is beyond all the material transformations that we see going on around us. But if we identify very carefully, very closely with the body made of matter and with its material situation, then yes, we are constantly in a state of fear.
Michael Cremo, I'm sorry that we didn't have more time tonight. This is a fascinating discussion. www.forbiddenarchaeology.com or mcremo.com. The forbidden archaeologist, Michael Cremo. I'm David Rubin. Coming up next, John Lear. We're going to talk about genetic engineering. Everything you don't want to know, right here on Coast to Coast.